Once again, here's Rick Preuss and Lee Cohen, who are keenly aware that dogs have owners and cats have staff. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show, and we have with us as our guest on the line Mike Hutchins, who is an ex-AKC judge and the former director of the UP 200 sled race, and he also happens to be a person who is on the opposite side of the tethering issue that we talked about a few weeks ago with Annie Carlson. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Mike, I really appreciated your response to the program we did a few weeks ago, because clearly you have very strong feelings and a reason behind them. Can you share with our listeners what is it that you object to with the long-term tethering legislation that Annie Carlson talked about on the program?
Well, I listened to Annie, and I'm convinced, and I've communicated with her through email, that she has a real pure concern and a desire to help situations that she's observed. Unfortunately, from further research, the animal rights folks have jumped on board, and I think have steered this beyond the point where Annie's concerns are. I think that a lot of people don't understand the difference between animal welfare, which are a very noble thing. It's the, and I support them 100%, is the education of pet owners. It's shelters. It's adoption agencies. It's the people who are working to make the lives of our pets better.
Right.
Animal rights is an extremist version of this, and their goal is to eliminate pet ownership completely.
Right.
They've managed to blur that line and have jumped into animal welfare concerns and have perverted these efforts and steered them towards extremist views. And I guess tethering is a great start.
Well, let's talk a little bit about animal tethering, because we do know that there are certain situations where, you know, our heart goes out to that particular dog out in the yard when the people are not giving it the care or attention that dog, it's basically left to its own on a tether. How do we reconcile that with issues that might be centered around tethering?
Well, I think the first thing we have to recognize is that is not exclusive to tethering. It can be a dog in a pen. It can be a dog out in somebody's backyard, fenced-in backyard. It can be a dog
in the basement,
12, 14, 16 hours in a crate in somebody's basement while they're gone at work.
Sure.
The tough thing is that ethics have more to do with the quality of life of an animal than the law does. It's almost impossible to legislate ethics. I think our welfare people who are working to educate people, to screen owners, to train owners, to let people know just what they're into before they accept an animal that is beyond their abilities, can help to address that. Making a whole segment of pet confinement illegal to address the 1% of people who happen to use that method of confinement in the course of neglecting or abusing their animal really doesn't take care of the problem.
Yeah, sometimes it's amazing how we have a tendency of avoiding the whole idea that we do need to have a social consciousness.
Absolutely. Ethics are a personal thing. The idea of having a dog or a pet of any kind quite often is more appealing than the reality of the responsibility that follows.
Mike, I have a question. A lot of the discussion about tethering has to do with limits. Do you think that there are any limits that are reasonable to impose upon dog tethering? Is there a limit of time that should be spent? Or, I mean, what are your feelings about the rules in particular? What is the right set of rules?
I don't think time is an answer. The reason being that if you put any kind of a time limit that's, say, less than what a person may be gone to work, then it makes it illegal for that person on a nice day like today to put their dog out with a beautiful house and shade and plenty of food and water to spend the day outside where it can relieve itself without being in a kennel where whatever it does, it has to live in the rest of the day. I think that's really difficult to do. There are working dogs. For example, at one time I had sled dogs. There were times when they would spend 24 hours on their chain. Well, that was probably just after they had spent 8 or 10 hours working in training to be racing sled dogs, and that was recuperatory time. Right. It was the right thing for them. I think every animal's situation is different, and to be able to think that we can legislate what is right for every situation is pretty naive.
Sure, sure.
And what about geography? Because I know in when you and I were talking prior to the interview, one of the issues that you raised is that sometimes if there are rules, they have to be very highly local, because you even mentioned that there are some neighborhoods where you can't even put up a fence. So how would you keep a dog in that setting?
Right. It makes it a really difficult situation, you know. I don't know, you know, we talk about geography, and I think that, there are some selections that should be made as the type of dog the person owns and keeps in certain environments and certain situations. I think that, that helps a lot. You know, I've owned many dogs in my life, from Beagles to Britneys to Shorthairs to Alaskan Huskies, a miniature poodle, Pomeranian. Right now I happen to have a Gordon Setter. I have never had a dog that was confined by tether, be injured on the tether, or escape from that tether and be hit by a car, or harass the neighbors, or chase somebody's chickens, or bite a child, or any of those kinds of things that we commonly look at with stray dogs. I have, however, had dogs climb over the top of an 8-foot kennel fence. I've had them roll under fencing that wasn't secured, the bottom as tightly as I thought. I've had them dig out of kennels. I've had them chew through kennel wire. In all those situations, they had the opportunity to become injured or killed. There are people within city limits, especially in some of the different subdivisions, where it's against the tenants of their purchase agreement to put up a fence of any kind.
Sure.
So then that animal is absolutely confined inside of the house unless the owner can be out spending time with the dog. And they can't even allow it off-leash in their backyard unless it's extremely well-trained, because it could dart out into the street and be hit by a car. Even in situations when I had sled dogs and I had them tethered, I had put a perimeter fence up, which is what is supposed to happen anytime you have over two dogs tethered in Michigan. You're supposed to have a perimeter fence to keep stray animals and stray people from coming in there and being in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
So any time that we utilize any method of containment, we have to utilize it well. I personally like a fairly tall post with a swivel arrangement.
Okay.
Minimizes tangling. It minimizes the chance of dragging a chain through the dog's feces during the course of the day until you've got it cleaned up, and keeps it more sanitary.
Right.
There's lots of positive things that we can do to make our animals' lives better. Making the most effective and most versatile means of confinement illegal probably isn't one of them.
I was just thinking, being a store owner, I was just this conversation, I'm thinking about going back and putting signage up around, you know, the trolley type products and the better use items, and just have a, you know, these few points that people don't think about when they go to buy the ground screwing in unit or whatnot, and just some of the few comments that you have made make sense, and yet, although it might make sense to you, it may not be top of the mind of the person coming in and getting something.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the type of ground material it's put over is so important. You know, having adequate drainage underneath their tendered area.
Yeah.
You know, just putting it out on a piece of sod or clay ground isn't a very sanitary situation. When I had sled dogs, I had what was basically the equivalent of beach sand. You know, what you're going to run into when you hit up around Gaylord, the Jack Pine country.
Right, right.
And so when my dogs, when it rained, with a torrential rainpour downfall, within 15 minutes, there was no standing water anywhere within their area. When they relieved themselves,
mm-hmm.
it immediately was absorbed in the ground, and the solid waste was dry and not a problem within a short period of time because of the type of ground cover that they were on.
That reminds me of the Australian Shepherd breeder that was here local that became great controversy because a huge torrential rainfall came, and days later the dogs were still underwater, if it will, and a little bit of planning ahead
may have solved that problem.
Right, right.
Yeah.
What great words you have. Thank you.
Mike,
thank you.
Let me ask you a question, because one of the arguments against tethering is that it increases the aggression of the dog, and you say otherwise. Can you expand upon that?
Yeah, I can. And I sent you a few links. I'm sure you got a chance to review them yesterday.
I did.
You know, they have made statements that that more dog bites are by tethered dogs than other means. The bottom line is the huge majority, 82% of fatal dog bites were by unrestrained dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Cornell University did a pretty extensive study of different methods of confinement and found no elevated aggression in dogs that were kenneled as opposed to dogs that were tethered, either direction. Mm-hmm. I believe that, again, it isn't the method of confinement. It's what you do to socialize that animal, mm-hmm. what you do to make it a well-adjusted animal. Whether you encourage aggression, it's a training thing. You know, I aggression is a funny thing. I go back to the days when I was in sled dogs, and I had a guy who wanted to bring a dog over and try him in my dog team. And he brought the dog over next to my team, and the dog growled. So he petted the dog to calm it down. And he did it again, and it growled, and he petted the dog. And I just stopped for a second and said, look through your dog's eyes. You just rewarded the dog two times in a row for growling.
Mm-hmm.
Hold the dog till he stops growling, then reward him.
Right.
And if we're spending time with our dogs and we're seeing the world through their eyes, we soon understand how to alleviate the stress that is often the reason that dogs become aggressive.
Right.
We learn the things that they don't like, the things that are triggers. And we can work on desensitizing that dog to the triggers.
Right.
Dog ownership, ethical dog ownership, successful dog ownership, is a full-time job.
Yeah, it sure is.
And it's not coming home and throwing two cups of dog chow in front of them, whether they're in a kennel, in your house, in your wherever, and ignoring them.
Right. No, you're exactly right. A lot goes into the training, and it is a full-time job. Mike, I want to thank you for coming on the show and giving your perspective, because, again, this is an issue we're not going to solve today, but it is the goal of our show to look at every angle of an issue and talk about it and understand everybody's perspective. So I thank you for yours. We really appreciate your coming on.
Thank you. I wanted to just conclude with one little second. This people who are pushing this have offered working dogs an exclusion. And And the simple fact that they'd offered exclusion means that they themselves believe it's possible to ethically tether dogs.
Right.
Or they would not offer an exclusion.
Gotcha.
I believe that as long as we can ethically do it, so can everybody else with correct training and information.
I think that could be so. Well, thank you again. We've been talking this morning with Mike Hutchins, a former AKC judge and someone who is opposed to the long-term tethering legislation we've discussed. And Rick, after the break, we're going to continue the conversation with Jamie McAloon-Lantman from the Ingham County Animal Control right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.